We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, the wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Okay, and I'm, I think, George, I believe you're unmuted.
Yeah, okay, good, thanks. I'm George, I'm alcoholic. I appreciate you inviting me to come talk with your group. I've been to Simple Actions a few times before, and I spoke once before, and I enjoy it. So thank you. I'm huge into this big book. In fact, on Monday nights, there's a group of my guys, we read every Monday night, and Saturday nights usually too, from this book. And I think a few of them, in fact, I know a couple of them are out there tonight, and I appreciate you guys showing up for them. Thank you. So my story is, you know, I've been sober for 27 years. I got sober when I was 27 years old. I'm 54, so the math's pretty simple. I was single when I got here, so I didn't have a wife who had literally gone through hell for me when I got to AA. But I did have plenty to write about in with regard to sex relations when I did my four step, and I did cause plenty of harm to women, which I made amends for in an eighth and a ninth step. And so, you know, I'll speak about that very briefly. Like some of the stuff. So first of all, like going through and making an A step in the big book, it says, one of the lines it says is that we made a list of people we had harmed. We went back to our four step and looked at that again. And there we get a lot of people that we had harmed. But then there were also people that I added that didn't appear on my four step, that I wasn't resentful at, that I didn't have fears of and so forth, but that I had hurt or felt at least that I had hurt, that I felt really badly about, that made my list. And after having put that stuff on a list, and I was, you know, pretty young when I got here and just ravaged with guilt, it was really helpful to me to go through that list with a sponsor, somebody who'd gone through this before, and do it the way it was written in the book. And so that's what I did, and it really helped me a lot. So I wasn't excused from making any amends of when I did harm, but some of the amends that I made were what you call living amends, right? And so there was a few, speaking specifically about sex, there was a few people that I had hurt badly and needed to make amends, like direct amends, face-to-face, which is different from saying we're sorry, which I don't know if we'll get into that later with a different reading or whatever, but it's amending one's behavior, right? And explaining that, you know, I'm not this person. I regret what I've done. I'm no longer this way. I acknowledge what I've done, and it's not who I am anymore, and taking responsibility for it. And then, but to me, the more, I don't know, meaningful or lasting part of the amends was amending my behavior, right? And not treating women or anybody else, men or children or dogs, badly, you know, to try to live by the golden rule and try to be instrument of God's peace and love, which includes sex, which is not always easy because it's such a, I don't know, powerful thing. But anyways, that's my thoughts about your reading there, Jessica. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Casey. I'm an addict. Thank you, Jessica and Jessica's cat. And thank you guys for having me. I'm like super stoked that I get to still be of service, even though we don't get to see each other face to face. And my name is Casey. Like I said, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and I have a home group. It meets on Tuesday nights. It's Big Book in Ghent. I have a sponsor. And my sponsor has a sponsor, and I have a sobriety date, April 15th, 2016. So I am like George. I didn't have a steady husband in the household that I had to make amends to for my drinking behavior and or my sex excursions during my drinking behavior. But I really like the line that says that we don't, you know, we may have problems. I tried to find it in the book. I'm sorry, I didn't open up when it was on the page where it basically says they doubt that alcoholics are too different from other folks when dealing, you know, when it comes to dealing with sex excursions, you know, with drinking and other women. And I always think to myself, are you sure? Are you sure about that? And so there was a really difficult thing for me. So I have been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous a lot longer than I've been sober. And I really thought that I was unique in such of a way because of my experiences with outside substances and some of the behaviors that I betrayed through trying to get those substances. And I was pleased and also quite astonished to find that I wasn't actually that much different than most of the women alcoholics that I know. And so it, but it was the sex portion of my behavior through my drinking career was definitely not something that I wanted to broadcast and speak openly and honestly about more than once to the people in these rooms. And I'm really thankful for the women that came before me, and some of them are in the room right now, that were able to, you know, shed light on some of their experiences. I never will forget, I called a lady in AA and I was just really tore up about the relationship that I was in when I came into AA, and she told me this story, and then she'd gone out to a bar and blah, blah, blah. And the bottom line to the story was she thought to herself, damn, I am a hoe. And it just, it really made me laugh because she's like, you know, my grandmother type, you don't ever judge a book by its cover in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not the conversation I thought I was going to have that day. And I was super thankful that she was able to be that open and that honest. And I wanted the freedom that she had telling that story, which I didn't have when I came in. And so there are definitely, it was really difficult because I was in a very destructive relationship when I came in. It was very difficult to do a four-step on that relationship and see my part. And even as dysfunctional as that relationship was, I behaved no matter what the other party was doing. You know, I behaved poorly. And for that, I was responsible. And, you know, one of the things that I have learned through my sex inventories is that some of the best amends is moving forward is to treat other people differently. And then also, which is kind of difficult, I don't know for me, I don't know about other women, is just to leave the other ones alone. Just for God's sakes, leave them alone. So it took a long time for me to be able to take the suggestion to do that. And I was actually given an ultimatum at one point from my sponsor that either leave me or leave him, but you can't have both. You know, and fortunately I was desperate enough to stop the destructive behavior, because I was not just being destructive to myself, I was also being destructive to him. So I'm super thankful for sponsorship in this program. And also the fact that none of my friends liked him. I'm super thankful for my friends too. And that's all I got.
Great, thank you. So we'll continue reading. Okay, we're on page 81. If we have no such complications, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Okay, and George, you see unmuted.
Oh, okay, right. I relate a lot to the, every time I read that, I think a lot of people do, to the part about alcohol being like a tornado roaring through the lives of others and leaving a bunch of wreckage in the wake. And, I did that and at the time didn't even realize it. And as I, you know, got sober, felt very guilty. I think I mentioned that earlier this evening. I felt really guilty about the way I'd behaved and the things I had done. I wanted to say the part about, it says there about the wives, and it said mothers too. And I share with you that my mother's sober alcoholic. She's sober in AA. She's been sober about 17 or 18, almost 18 years now. And she lives in Massachusetts still, where we grew up. But helped me. She was a great mom, even though she drank a lot when we were kids. And she was really instrumental in getting sober, even though I've been sober longer than her. I think that she prayed me in here. She used to walk around the where we lived. There was this park, and she would walk around with a dog, drinking vodka out of a pint bottle, walking the dog every night, but praying while she walked the dog that wherever I was, and she didn't even know because I left, I'd been kicked out, that I'd be okay, and that somehow I'd get sober. And if you believe what we say there, but that we're sober by God's grace, I'm telling you that what I think is that maybe God heard my mom say her prayers, and that that's what got me sober. And then she got sober too. So I'm going to tell my huge long life story, but I'll just say the brief part about it so far as this paragraph and like mothers and stuff like that, and I'm making amends and all. But when I was a very young man, the first time I was 17, the second time I was 18, I was a drunk, and I did a lot of other things as well. And I was a thief besides that. And I was really abusive, particularly to my brothers. And I stole from my own family and stuff. And anyway, when I turned 18, my old man had enough, and he put up with, his wife was a drunk, his mother was a drunk, and I, his oldest living son, I had an older brother who passed, but I was his oldest living son, was a drunk, and he never had the stones to put my mother out, but he put me out, and I don't blame him. And he gave me plenty of chances. He'd sent me to rehab. I'd been to jail. I'd been to treatment centers. And when I was 18, he put me out. He said, "I don't care what you do, but," and he says, "the first time, not the last time, but the first time ever in my life I'd ever seen him cry." He said, "But I love you so much, son, but I can't continue to let you put me and your brothers and my wife through this BS anymore, and you got to go." And that had an impact on me because he was like, he was a man of his generation. He was a hard guy, and he would never cry, man. And I left, and I didn't come back. And he would not take my calls. I could not go home. And I was sober almost 3 years before I finally was able to make amends to him, which is, I don't know if now is the right time to tell that story. I don't want to talk too long and give Casey a chance to talk. But that one stung. And so they mentioned there about the moms and the ruin the lives for others. But seeing that and then thinking back on it, I had no idea how much he loved me and how hard it was for me to do that and how that wrecked my family's life and my brother's too. And then not even knowing where I was. And I hope I get a chance to tell the story now, but I don't want to go on too long, man. But I'll just say this real quick version of it. Then I fixed that, man, that by God's grace and by being in the fellowship of AA, that my old man loves me. He won't say it out loud, but I know I'm his favorite. I'm his number one favorite son, even though it's our little secret. But he loves me more than he loves my brothers because I'm like the one that got lost and then got found, the prodigal son from the Bible, you know, the story from the Bible, the one that got lost and got found. And that he'd given up on me, like he literally threw me out and wrote me off. And I don't blame him, man. It kind of helped me hit a bottom. But that you know, when someone comes back, like that you think was lost, it's amazing how they got it. And then he's super smart, too, and he's got a lot of character. And then when I made my amends, he wouldn't let me see him for 3 years, almost 3 years. And then when I did see him, he said, I'm tired of hearing you say you're sorry, that I wanted to see it, like prove it, you know, like show me. And that's why he wouldn't let me talk to him or see him for 3 years. And then when he did see me, he said, at that time I got my GED and I was taking classes at a community college and stuff. And he said something like, your words, when I made my amends, he said something to the effect of, your words mean a great deal to me, but your words are just an indication of who you are. It's really obvious to me that you have changed, meaning like amended, like change, like amendments to the Constitution, like amended your behavior. That was, I think, the most meaningful amends that I've ever made in my life. And when he cracked his ribs and fell down and got pneumonia, he called me. He didn't call my brothers. He called me to come take care of him. And which is a great blessing, man. It's a small thing, I guess, but to just to be a, you know, a son among sons, of worker among worker, and so forth. But that's more than enough out of me. That's more than I wanted to talk. So thank you.
Thanks, George.
For me, there wasn't a wife or a mother at home. There was actually a 15-year-old girl, and that was my daughter. And it, you know, it has been a long, strange road as far as my relationship with her goes. And it, and I love her so much, and she has worked really hard to get to know her mom and to continue to love her mom and to rebuild the very, very broken relationship between the two of us. And I can absolutely say today that that she is doing her fair share. And I have a plethora of women that have walked through this journey with me, because I was so far gone, I didn't know how to parent, and I most certainly didn't know how to amend the relationship that had formed between us. And there towards the end of my drinking and using, she was definitely the parent of the relationship. And it, I'm so incredibly thankful for her today. And I'm also just really thankful for, I remember in the beginning, I went to go live with Bob Monheim, and he would not mind me saying that. And I was outside in my actually not even my car, in his car, because it was raining, and I was just really upset about something that had happened with my daughter, who was living with her niece. And my sponsor told me that it was just time for me to leave my daughter alone for a while, and that if I was going to fix this, that I was going to need to back off of my relationship with her and to just get out of the way for a little bit. And I could not, I was so angry. I could not see how, after disappearing and disappearing and disappearing, because that was my act, I was like a Houdini, because I didn't want her to see me in the condition that I was in. So I would disappear and parent through phone calls. And how the solution would be to leave her alone. It was really hard. And I can remember just, you know, being pissed and just saying, I like absolutely hate the words that you're telling me, and I completely disagree with you, but I was willing to do it anyway. And I was very fearful, because I was afraid if I stepped out that life, you know, her beautiful life that was now calm, and she was getting all of the things that I was not giving to her, that I was just going to be omitted and erased. And it was actually quite selfish looking at it, but I just wanted to be like, start to show up all the time and show her how dependable I could be, and, you know, and do all of these things. So when it says, you know, getting sober isn't enough, it's not enough, but it also, I can absolutely tell you that in most cases, I don't know what enough is, and I don't know what the right move is. And I have to talk to other women and even men, some men, you know, that have the same reach out to people who have had the same types of experiences to me, to find out exactly what that means when it comes to rebuilding your home life. Because it has been, our relationship today is absolutely phenomenal. And it's been a good solid, you know, 8 years since we've been on this journey together of the just completely devastating situation of that was called our home, you know, when she was in late middle school, early high school. So and I can say, like, for today, the work still continues, because I'm still learning, you know, how to be a mom, you know, how to, I don't know how to parent a 24-year-old. I mean, I know that she's a grown young lady now, and but she's still my daughter, and there's still wreckage of the past that I get to clean up now on a daily basis, you know, and she's, my daughter is very different than I am. She's very emotional and soft, and I am very coarse and stern, and so like learning to like things that like I literally, you know, give an eye roll about that she's extremely upset about, you know, my normal response is get it together, you know, like you're gonna have to be tougher than this, Mariah, like you're allowing them to make you feel this way, you know, like what a pep talk, you know. And so like today I'm able to like roll my eyes because she's not in front of me and say a small prayer like help show me how to show up, because what she does not need when I'm given the gift of her even calling me when she's upset, because what a gift, you know, is for me to, you know, tell her what she needs to do, you know, instead of just saying, you know, I'm so sorry you're having a bad day, you know, and that, all of that is not of me. That is completely of my higher power and my complete willingness to ask to be shown how. And also, you know, the credit is to her too, because when I started listening, she started telling me what she needed, you know, what, like, why do you always have to give me something to do? Why can't you just listen? You know, how many times did she have to say that before I finally just did that, you know? So that's what I got for that.
Great. Thank you, Casey. We're going to continue on page 83. It says, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. George?
Yeah, okay. So so I got a couple things to share about this. So then, so the spiritual life being not a theory, we have to live it, is so true for people like us or people like me, I guess, to speak for myself, right? And that... you know, starting out every morning in the right way by, you know, getting right with my higher power, saying a prayer is a crucial thing for me, especially during times like with COVID-19 or whatever, being on lockdown. It's a really important like tool for recovery. And that, you know, if we take our first step, we're powerless over alcohol, lives become manageable. Basically says we're doomed. And so without a higher power, right, whether you call it a group of drunks or good early direction or God, we're doomed, right? And so I choose to call high power God. And so it's really important for me, if I want to stay sober, to avail myself to that grace every morning. And so I do it. And to be honest with you, man, I mean, sometimes I do it as like rote prayers as a matter of course, just kind of going through the motions, right? I do that a lot less when I'm not able to go to as many AA meetings because it's just really important, you know? And so anyways, and then I'll tell you real quick about like the thing that says we clean house with family, asking in morning meditation shows patience, kindly, tolerance, and love. That's hard to do. I don't know, I mean, for me anyways. And the hardest place for me to show patience, tolerance, kindness, and love without doubt is my own house. Man, I'm way better at loving my brother alcoholics and people that I meet in AA or that are, you know, trying to go through steps or whatever, or even the clerk in 7-Eleven or somebody at work. And that for whatever reason, I guess it's because I'm selfish, man. I just take it for granted that I'm the father of this house and you kids and my wife, they're going to, you know, should be paying more attention to me. And so particularly now with this virus. So my situation now is like probably a lot of your situation, which is that I'm working from home. My wife got laid off, but now she's back part-time to work, but whatever. But both my kids, including my grown son, is home. So there's four of us. My house isn't big. I like my house. It's great, but it's small. And so it's more important than ever to be, you know, patient, tolerant, kind, and love. And I learned that, I swear this is true, man, as much from my wife, who's in Al-Anon, who practices a program there, than from any other place. And she's constantly telling me, man, that my job here is to love and not to judge and not to correct. And then, so I'm not going to go on this rant about but it's also your job to be a parent, right? But like with the six, I go on the 16, like with him, it is kind of your job, you know, to like tell him what's right, what's wrong, and not tolerate certain things and not accept things that are unacceptable and things like that. We let go a lot more with the 20-year-old. Anyway, I've noticed that my kids were going to church. I'm not going to go on a thing about going to church either, but I have my own views. But my wife's much more religious than me. I spend a lot more time, I think, with the AA and trying to have a spiritual program that way than she does. And we've exposed our kids to the spiritual life. They kind of grew up in AA, taking them to church too. And then we let them go and they do what they want. And I think that's right for us. So I don't have much more to say about on that paragraph than that, but thank you.
So it is definitely easier to be kind, loving, and tolerant inside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous than inside the confines of your house, particularly when it starts to feel like a small prison. So it has been very challenging, you know, as probably with everybody's household, being in such close confinement with everyone. And it's been a phenomenal playground for all of my character defects. And I was kind of slow to the spiritual aspect. I was very sponsor dependent and for a long time early in sobriety. And it took me a while to start practicing being sponsor dependent and also God dependent, you know, and I'm very thankful that I have the sponsor that I had and that I was able to be dependent upon her. But I'm also thankful for the women that I was surrounded by that were spending time meditating and talking about it and like their experience with it, because it has taken me probably 10 years to be able to get to 3 minutes of stillness. No, it's very hard. My head is very loud, and they said, you know, don't try to stop the thoughts. Don't judge the thoughts. I'm like, there's so many of them. And, so it has, but I'm thankful because I got to watch them practice it, and it encouraged me to practice, and it didn't feel so awkward. I definitely grew up in a religious household, and when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the God of my understanding is not the God that I grew up with. And I didn't have a lot of respect for the God that I grew up with, and surprisingly now, I don't feel anything towards that God, and I'm super thankful that the rest of my family has him, you know. But I have my own experience and my own journey. But it's just like somebody said to me, you know, it's like meeting someone new. You know, if you don't make an effort to have a conversation, you're never going to get to know them. You know, and so it was, and I could definitely say my sponsor made me start a God Shot book when I first got sober, these little miracles that happened throughout my life, throughout my sobriety and early sobriety. It's just, you know, just scattered all over with miracles. And it was the act of writing it in my God Shot book was like the act of me first really getting to know that my higher power not only was there then, but had been there all along. Because I am was pretty easy to sell myself on the fact that, you know, that he didn't love me or she didn't love me or wasn't around or whatever. So it I'm still growing in that area. I am a parent today to my niece, and she's 11, and I get to watch myself consistently do the very things that I said if I could re-raise my kid that I wouldn't do, you know. And I'm not talking about the drinking portion, you know, I'm talking about the losing my temper portion and the, you know, being stressed out portion and the not playing enough board games portion and, you know, all of that nonsense. And I'm still doing the same thing. And so funny, like I'm the common denominator So it is, I'm so thankful that, you know, a lady that lost her kid twice gets the honor to raise someone else's kid. I mean, what a gift that really is. And she's a phenomenal kid. I'm really glad, that she's with me, and she really is just, amazing. But I'm really reaching right now to be kind, loving, and tolerant. And you know, I'd learned something recently that you can give consequences without being extremely angry. Who knew? You know? So it has been really effective for me. Because not only was I damaging, you know, her, but I was also damaging myself. The amount of, and I'm also older now too. So being that upset about kid stuff is just exhausting. She would get in trouble, and I would need a nap. So it, so I'm thankful that I have, you know, women around me that I can talk to, and other parents, you know, about how to parent, and that I get to grow in this area of my life. And it really is, and it's spreading out into, you know, my work life as well. I work in construction, and, you know, you can behave in that field in a way that you can't behave inside of an office. Matter of fact, my boss got fired. My sponsor got fired for doing something that I do on a regular basis. It's like, I would be in trouble. And so I have also been able to take, just because it's allowed, it doesn't mean that it's necessary. And so to be able to take some of the lessons, you know, of life on life's terms and living by spiritual principles, you know, outside of the rooms. And I'm thankful that I get the opportunity to do it. And I do know that there is the line in there that says, some things we can't make right, but you know, we're willing, but we just have to have the honest desire to make them right. And that was a really hard one for me, because I needed to make everything right. And because for me, and I didn't know it was actually quite selfish, but I needed to make it right, because until I made it right, I wasn't going to be able to get over it for myself. And lo and behold, that's not what amends is about at all. So it's been a journey of learning. Like, I had this eagerness to make everything right, so I would be more comfortable, and I have learned that's not always the case. And particularly with my family, I've had some beautiful amends, and they feel phenomenal. They really do, and you really do feel like, you know, you mended the bridge that you burnt as best as you could. But my family, they didn't want to have any sort of conversation with me about anything about the past at all. I mean, like, there was no heartfelt conversation. I really wanted that. And for selfish reasons, because I wanted to have the conversation. I wanted to get it all out. And then I wanted to move forward with a clean slate, and they were not there. And fast forward 8 or 9 years, and on some levels, they're still not. And so it has to be a living amends for me. And lo and behold, that's exactly what I needed. Like, I didn't need to be able to say everything that I felt so I could feel better. And I needed to actually to have the time to sit with the discomfort and to really learn what I had done. Because if I had made an amends to my family 8 years ago or 5 years ago, it wouldn't have been a whole amends, because I wasn't even capable of really seeing the damage that I had done yet. And so I'm super thankful that it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to, and that I have a family that's loving enough to just accept me back into their life and watch, you know, because that's really what they've done, is they've just accepted me back and they've watched. And then the amends that I couldn't go out and make, I found a way to make them. And my sponsor and I came up with ways to do that, because I was a terrible thief. I stole from anybody. I stole from my family. I stole from a lot of people. And so it's been like a financial amends. It's been a long journey of financial amends. I used to dine and dash all the time. And I went back to the restaurants, the waitresses that I ran out on as many as I, you know, as I could, the grocery stores, you know, and made amends and said what I had done and asked how I could make it right. you know, and that was, I did not want to do that, particularly to the grocery store, because I just knew they were going to have me arrested. And it didn't work out that way. And my sponsor was like, well, then you have to be willing to be arrested, you know, and I was not willing to be arrested, but I did it anyway. And fortunately, that's not the way it turned out. But the truth is that I just really had to put it into God's hands. And I thought that those were going to be the difficult amends to make, and they turned out to be the easy ones. And it, you know, it's the ones where I didn't get to quickly snap my fingers and, you know, save some money and go make it right. And what I have found is that the things that I needed to make amends for stayed with me for a really long time. I've been coming in and out of this program, and I actually just in the last week was able to make an amends that was 20 years old from a lady that I was supposed to do some landscaping for, and I ran off with her money, you know, and so it just, but having that level of like just complete honesty with myself, you know, because it would have been really easy to just blow that off, to say, hey, I did this and I won't do it again, you know, and it just, I don't believe for me it was the right thing to do. And, you know, after all of these years, I can still see her face, you know, and I can still remember. I often think like, what would I do if I ran into her, you know? So I'm thankful to be sober, and I'm thankful to have people around me to help support me through my living amends and also through the amends that I was able to make face to face.
Great. Thank you both. We continue on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter, and there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
So I love that line, that last line you just read. That was really important for me. It's probably important for quite a lot of us. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. So I really hated myself when I come to AA. I had, you know, low self-esteem or whatever, but I was kind of just a low person. I didn't have much that was worthy of esteem, you know. And I've put together quite a number of years of pretty good living, and I'm, you know, not wealthy or not important person, but I'm a good dad, I'm a good husband, a good worker, and those are esteemable things. And, you know, I have a higher power that loves me and wants me to channel his love, you know, try to be a service. And he knows that I don't have to kiss anybody's ass just because I was used to be a drunk, you know, I'm not anymore. And it's really important for me. I've got this line, I'm sure a lot of you do too, underlined in my book. You know, I don't have to look at my shoes when I'm talking to people, and I'm not always wrong, and I'm not always guilty anymore. So when I was a kid and a younger man, like whenever something was stolen or broken or vandalized, it was my fault, and I would be blamed for it. And usually it was true. It usually was my fault, and that's not the case anymore. But living that down, for me at least, it's taken a long time. And somewhere else it says, I don't know, I can't find it, but, you know, we can look the world in the eye again. What an unbelievable blessing that is, you know, for someone like me to be able to look the world in the eye, to, you know, to stand on my feet. And it was no given. So anyway, let's say at the beginning of the paragraph about things that we could never fully write. There was one amends, I'll share this briefly, which is painful for me, that I hurt some people a long time ago in Tennessee, in Nashville, and I got out of jail in Memphis, and I was driving across Nashville drunk, and I got in a car wreck, and it's a long story, but But the shortest version is that I hurt this woman and her sister and their daughter in a car wreck and knocked their car upside down on a guardrail over Nashville. And they're all hurt badly. And I beat the DUI and escaped. Funny enough, I mean, just as an aside, I'd say this, that night in Nashville, as I was escaping out of Nashville, it occurred to me that those people in AA were right. You definitely are alcoholic. You really should just pull over and check into a detox right now and go back to AA right now. And then I looked down the floorboard and I still had, you know, 8 beers left out of a case. And I thought, after a stressful situation like that, anybody would have to have a beer or two just to mellow out. I'm going to get sober tomorrow. I swear to God, it's the truth. But when I got sober, it bothered me, man. I haven't hurt those people. And I tried to, this is before Facebook and all like that, to hunt them down and find them to fix it, pay the bills, at least the hospital bills, take responsibility and apologize. I never did, and it bothered me. So since then, I've been driving really good, you know, and I haven't hurt anybody, and I don't drive drunk or smash into people, and I'm doing, you know, good. I even taught my children how to drive, and so whatever, it's the best I can do, and I ask God to forgive that, and I gotta believe that He does forgive that, so. Anyways, when they said about the one, there's one other one, which is a woman I heard a long time ago, which I haven't been able to find and make amends to, and I don't think I ever will be able to, you know, maybe on the other side, maybe we see each other on the side, and I'll say sorry then. But anyways, that's all I'm really going to say about that, so thank you.
So there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them. If we honestly say ourselves, we would right them if we could. And particularly involving my family, as a mom, the absolute worst torture that I can think of would be my daughter not talking to me, you know, and that was a huge fear even in my story before, is that her life would get good and she would just want to go away and not have to deal with me, you know. And so even feeling that way, I spent a good 8 years of my life not speaking to my own mother. But that was different. it was gravely different because my mother was an alcoholic and she was dependable and she was loving and she showed up and she did the best she could as my mom. And what I know now is that I get to make a living amends to my mom by showing up and being a daughter today. But I know without a shadow of a doubt, I can never fully make that right. I just know that because I'm a mom. And I know that my mom loves me and my mom forgives me. And because she's my mom and that's what moms do, you know? And so, but I can honestly say, I will never do that again. I will never do that to my mom again. And so I get to, you know, try to learn how to be a good daughter. Because I, like I said before, I don't always know what that looks like. I know what I think it should look like, but that's not always what I think people want or need from me is not really what they always want or need from me. And the same goes, you know, for my dad, because I was, you know, when I was playing Houdini, I used to go on a K-station instead of a vacation. It was like a K-station when I would just go completely out to lunch. When I got sober, I was a year older than I thought I was. I went on a really long vacation. I didn't even know what year it was. But you know, the worry, you know, like George talked about with his mom, that I, and my parents have this like built-in Al-Anon skill that they were just born with. I am so incredibly thankful that my parents were very good at loving me from a distance. I didn't get very far with them with my nonsense. And I used to be very resentful towards them about that because they were never really there to bail me out of too many scrapes. But I'm super thankful for it today because I was very manipulative and I was a huge con artist. And I genuinely believe that the only reason why I got sober is because my consequences got so hard. And so had my parents supported me the way I thought that they should have been long, then I can't help but to wonder if I would have ever made it into the rooms alive. So, So those types of things that I can't fully make right, then I just have to chalk up to today to just doing the best that I can. And there are some people, you know, it's funny because there have been times in my life when I felt like all of my amends were done and then I would remember one, you know? And so there's some people in my life today that aren't living anymore. That I will probably end up, you know, having to write a letter to, and, you know, and it, one of the reasons, you know, going back to, not being able to make amends, to my daughter when I, you know, and I just wanted to get it over with, is I can definitely say if I had had the opportunity to make that amends, I would have been servile and scraping, because look, amends is not about me. But until I had done the work on the inside with myself and with my higher power, there's absolutely no way I was going to be able to offer myself to someone else to ask for forgiveness when I needed their forgiveness to make me right. And I really needed to get to a place with my higher power and with myself, a place of like genuine forgiveness, whether someone forgives me or not. That I can look myself and society in the face. And that when I got to that point through inventory and being honest and service work and surrounding myself with people of Alcoholics Anonymous, then I could go to somebody and not be servile and scraping. And then just for a brief moment, think of somebody other than myself. Because the point of amends is not to say I'm sorry. The point of an amends is to say, hey, I think when I stole from you, you probably felt very betrayed. Like just for a brief moment, think about how someone else. I bet I worried you when I didn't call you for all of those years. I can imagine what your birthday was like or my birthday was like. You know, that to me is, and what I have been taught is what making an amends is not. It's not about saying I'm sorry. It's about genuinely thinking about the way you made someone else feel and that, and then offering yourself up to their opinion if maybe you had missed something, you know, without defense, without a scoreboard of what they did to you and vice versa. And for me, getting to that place with some of my amends took some time. Particularly, you know, even like with my mom, you know, because I didn't just not talk to her because she wasn't cool. You know, I was mad. I was really mad at her, and it took me, I was venomous towards my mother when I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's all completely gone now, and it's not something that I did. I'd worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just became willing to be a better daughter. I just became willing to let go of the anger and the argument and the fight. And I did the same thing with a higher power, by the way, because I was pretty ticked off at that guy too, when I came in, and it just started with a little seed of willingness, and it took a long time, you know? And so, but in the meantime, I didn't just not do anything, you know? Fortunately, when it comes to my amends, I had a lot of work to do. So I was able to condition myself to opening up and really, being capable of making amends by starting the amends that I could do at that time. And so I think that's all I got. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. This is our last reading for the night. Also from page 83. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Okay, and we've got about 3 minutes or so, so we can wrap up with these last shares.
All right. So being brief then, I'd say that at the risk of pointing out the obvious, So not coincidentally, right, that these promises were written after step nine. Was pointed out to me by my sponsor a long time ago, and I think it's an important thing that it doesn't say here, we started hanging around AA and digging fellowship and drinking coffee, and suddenly we will know a new freedom and a new happiness, right? There's a lot of work and willingness and honesty before that, right? I could speak about these for quite a while, but I'll say this just to be brief. I love this one. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. And then no matter how far down we have gone, we see how experience can benefit us. Man, I felt so worthless and useless when I got here. I was constantly a burden to everybody that I came in contact with, whether it was parents or girlfriends or brothers of anybody. And that's no longer the case, man, that I'm an instrument of God's peace in a pretty small way. I mean, I said earlier, I'm never going to be like super important or wealthy, but I'm an instrument of God's peace. And, you know, my purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. What a blessing, man. It's unbelievable that God picks us up broken off the scrap heap of life and uses his broken people to fix other broken people. And it's a wonderful way to live this program that we've got, and happens to arrest the disease of alcoholism. Well, that's it for me.
Yeah, so George basically picked out my favorite parts as well, as no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. And I can tell you, when I first came into this program, I did not feel like there was anything that I had that could benefit other people. And from the moment I stepped foot in these doors, the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous made me feel welcome and important. And when they used to, when I was a newcomer and they would tell me I was the most important person in the room, I had no idea what they meant. And I'm so incredibly thankful for them. And I'm thankful for the newcomers that that are showing up into the meetings today. And for the people that were in the rooms when I showed up. And congratulations to Andy, who has 6 days today, you know, and the promises do come true, you know. Fear of financial insecurity. Like, are you kidding me? I owed so much money and just fines. I mean, it took me 2.5 years just to get a driver's license when I got into this program. And then another couple of years to finally have like reliable transportation. But all of my problems have been solved by working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And all the problems that I have come up in my life today are solved by working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm super thankful that you guys had me tonight.
All right. Thank you both so much for your shares this evening. We do have a few things to wrap up the meeting. So I want to mention again the seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. Is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. There are links in the chat pod. And I will also include simpleactions.net. There is now a donation link there, specifically for the Simple Actions group. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Thank you all for being a part of that. Simple Actions is a home group. Home group members, please raise your hand. If you are interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting to connect with any of the folks with their hands raised. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, several of us will be available in the Zoom room after the meeting closes. Please stick around and talk with us, or feel free to email info@simpleactions.net with questions. Thank you to everyone who participated this evening. We will give everyone the ability to unmute themselves to participate in the Lord's Prayer. And then, of course, to thank George and Casey for their wonderful shares. So we will wrap up with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.